Hello and welcome to Beyond the Ad Account podcast, where we're going to talk about the things we learn and the struggles we are going through growing direct-to-consumer brands at an e-commerce aggregator slash incubator called Blink Ecom. My name is Dylan, and I'm really happy you've joined me today because the topic that we're going to be covering today is some of the background on why and how we decided to start Blink, and why we went a different direction to most e-commerce aggregators, deciding to actually build the brands rather than buy and grow. Hey, so today with the kind of intro episode, I wanted to cover some of the background on how we basically started or decided to go into growing our own e-commerce brands coming from an agency background, and why we went into a different direction than most similar aggregators or e-commerce incubators. So at Blink, we're focusing on growing fast, scaling, fast growing e-commerce brands, focusing on own product development and aggressive growth through paid advertising channels. So that's the main driver of these brands. And the big debate, both internally and when talking to others who are either part of e-commerce aggregators, agencies, D2C brands, and so on, was whether it's a better idea to go and buy existing brands and start growing from that point where you acquire them, or to build brands from scratch. And after quite thoroughly checking out the buy side, seeing what's available, seeing where we could add some value, we found it really hard finding a brand that would even fit some of our initial target numbers or like unit economic goals that we had for our own brands. With 6 or 7 years of performance advertising background, we knew what margins we wanted, what unit economics we wanted, what kind of products we wanted to have to basically makes our lives a bit easier on the actual e-commerce growth side, since we already know that like the growing part of the brand is already hard enough, and kind of make it easier on us with really picking the right unit economics for the brands that we wanted to grow. So that's why we decided to go the build route, and I'll go through a few of the main reasons why we in the end decided on this way. Full disclosure, we did actually acquire our first brand, but it was more of a takeover of an inactive brand and just acquiring their assets rather than acquiring a fully like actively growing brand along with the team and so on. Like I mentioned, building D2C brands is already difficult enough, especially in the last year, the difficulty kind of got ramped up. By going the build route, we had an opportunity to, as much as we can, stack the deck in our favor before we are even starting. So we try to make the kind of the underlying genetics or the foundations of the brands that we are starting to build as optimal as you can and as tailored to growing with paid advertising and like your own e-commerce channel as possible. So one of the first ways where we found that we can have a very positive impact comparing to kind of just acquiring brands was really focusing on our own product development process, on our own formulations, on really making we have some unique products and improving on what kind of the existing market players are already having in their like product repertoires. So that we have at least something to help build somewhat of a moat around each brand. In D2C, it's somewhat hard to do that because the only real advantage you have is how fast you can move. Pretty much anything you do product-wise, formulation-wise, can be copied by someone with either more money, bigger team, whatever. But they're always going to be like half a year or a year behind you. So moving fast is the ultimate advantage, but focusing on actually building your own product, developing your own product, developing your own formulations, tastes, flavors, whatever the product is that you are doing, we found was still way better because a lot of the brands that we looked into acquiring, in the end, it was just either an already existing product with I don't know, something from Alibaba with just basically a logo slapped on it, or very minor modifications, and then the brand built around it, or like a private label product that basically anyone that can order the MOQ from that manufacturer could copy you over a weekend. So that's the main focus on our own brands, is also really digging deep into product development, having a good fast cadence on product development as well, so that you're actually as quickly as you financially can, or as quickly as liquidity allows, actually building up the product catalog for the brands that you're doing, and having that drive a lot of the overall benefits as far as like lifetime value goes, as far as selling to existing customer goes, as far as finding new winners or not having all of your eggs in one basket, because oftentimes either some products are more seasonal, some products maybe work better on certain advertising channels, and if those advertising channels start to underperform, it's good to have somewhat of a spread in your product catalog. We also went into categories with relatively low manufacturing cost and high LTV or repurchase rate. So the main categories that we are currently building in are supplements, beauty, and food and drink. And all of them, especially like half a year to a year ago when we were planning and formulating our approach, basically anyone we talked to had a lot of supply chain delays, tenfold increases in shipping costs that they had, like delays with manufacturing because it was basically they had no control on getting the source materials to the factories and so on. So we initially wanted to move into categories where you have way more manufacturer flexibility than maybe some other categories, where if you basically have your own formulation and if all the manufacturers that you can potentially work with have an okay way to actually access the raw materials that you need for those products, you can very like without that much of an issue swap out suppliers if they have issues, if another supplier can give you better financing terms or a better price per unit or anything like that. Plus, it's you can very easily find those manufacturers somewhat locally, or at least within a few hours of yourself. In a lot of cases, the actual lead time, so the actual production time, isn't that much different. But obviously, the logistics are way different. It's way easier to just get something on a truck in Europe and get delivered to you than going for like an ocean freight. And it's also way easier to communicate with the actual manufacturers on things like both pricing and especially payment terms. So obviously with, I don't know, Chinese suppliers or anything like that, if you're not doing pretty huge volumes, it's in most cases very hard to go into pricing terms, into, I don't know, net 60, net 90 payment terms and so on. Whereas with a lot of more local suppliers where you can actually meet them in person, explain a bit more on how your business is operating, how you're running, and build a bit more trust with them, it's a bit easier to go into things like payment terms with them as well. And it's, I think payment terms with manufacturers are even a bigger deal than actual cost per unit, because in most cases we are dealing with quite a high margin products. So 5%, 10% on the actual product cost is not going to make or break the entire thing. But having extra 60 or 90 or however many days of liquidity, so before you actually have to pay that supplier, can make a huge difference in growing the brand. Because in most cases that we've seen, the biggest constraint on D2C brand growth was cash flow, liquidity, kind of how you can actually manage, obviously, your operating expenses, your advertising expenses, and inventory planning, inventory purchasing, all of the kind of making sure you have enough money for stock and enough money for growth. So yeah, that was a bit long-winded on why we are going into those categories. Alongside with that, we also have in the supplement, food and drink, and beauty categories, we have relatively high LTVs, or at least a way to go to high LTVs. We have good repurchase rates. We have potential for subscriptions, although to be honest, in Europe, especially in some of the like Middle and Eastern European countries, it's kind of hard to run subscriptions because most of the orders are still based on cash on delivery, which is not very conducive to subscriptions. And we have a high potential for bundling, especially like, for example, beauty products or food and drink products where you have multiple flavors. You can easily create more like high average order value bundles. And all of the three categories are very conducive to later expansion into either retail or e-tail. You already have a lot of established players with high enough volumes where retail or e-tail could become a really significant portion of each of these brands' growth. So you're not only growing and focusing on kind of paid acquisition through your own channel, but you're actually going to the channels where people are already purchasing those categories of items already. One of the good things with an aggregator or an incubator is also some of the sharing you can do between brands. So obviously the main things are like, we're focusing on simplicity, we're focusing on using the same kind of systems throughout all the different brands that we are building, from using the same CMS and tools and a lot of the same approaches to advertising, creative production, and so on. And you do also get some benefit from like resource sharing, people that are able to work on multiple brands at once. But what we're already seeing is way more important part is the knowledge sharing between the brands, especially on the paid advertising side. It's very easy to see, okay, this type of funnel or this type of approach to Facebook ad creatives or this type of approach to organic TikTok is working really well on this brand. Let's basically take that process, take that approach to that advertising channel or whatever, and let's use it on the other brands that we have as well. It's not always a one-to-one. It's not always going to work exactly the same way, but you do come from somewhat of a best practice or somewhat of a practice that has proven to work for one brand, and you have a better chance of working on the other brands as well, especially with how much similarities they have in the structure of the brand as well. One of the big downsides, though, with going the build way rather than the buy way is the first, let's say, first million euros of revenue is obviously the hardest and the slowest to get. So we are sacrificing some time by going this way, especially time at the beginning of growth. But our idea is, especially from the brands that we have either seen or work with, is that we're gonna have an easier way if we set the right foundation at the start in scaling beyond the first few million euros of yearly revenue. So the brands that we've worked with, the brands that we've seen, the brands that we've had access to or talked to, the kind of main first sticking points that they had were usually in the kind of 1 to 5 million euros of yearly revenue, because that's, I think, kind of the point where some of the things really start to show up if you don't have them set properly at the beginning. Because I don't know, for the first million, you can, even if your margins aren't optimal, if your cash flow isn't good, if your suppliers are slow or anything like that, you can maybe work harder, you work a few more hours, you're a bit more scrappy and a bit more frugal with some of your decisions. You can basically, I don't know, maybe take over the workload that you would maybe have to hire for someone for, but the team is not yet big enough. So the founder basically hustles more, works harder, tries harder to push the brand beyond that first like 1 or 2 million euro yearly revenue. But at that point, you usually have to start hiring for some positions. You have to allocate bigger amounts of money to your stocks or to your product planning. You're usually also working on some product development at this point, and product development is also both time consuming and money consuming, without any guarantee that like the first product that you're gonna develop after the kind of your flagship product that you started with is gonna be as big of a success as your flagship was to begin with. And so this is usually the point where you can't hide bad margins or low numbers or low kind of cash conversion cycles anymore, and you start to suffer a slowdown in your growth because of it. But what we're planning, we're obviously going to see if it's as ideal as we are planning right now, or if it's going to have that much of an impact. But we're going to see if having all of those things in order, so making sure your cash conversion cycle is very short, making sure your product stock does not have to represent a huge percentage of your overall kind of cash flow allocations. We're going to see if that helps the growth once you are beyond the kind of a few million euros per year in revenue, and if that's going to make a big impact in this brand's growth to the point where it's more worthwhile to grow the brand from scratch than to acquire maybe a brand that does not have optimal numbers at the start and trying to grow it from there. So that's it for the first episode. That's a quick intro into what we're doing and how we are thinking about approaching to grow e-commerce brands from scratch. Obviously, other episodes are going to be more focused on a specific either problem or anything we are actively working on. So for example, I think the next one is on bundling and increasing your average order value, and obviously similar stuff that you can improve your e-commerce brand's performance without just talking about tweaking the ad accounts, how you're running ads, what kind of creatives you're doing, what kind of campaign structures you're running, and so on. Focusing on everything around the actual advertising efforts that also plays a huge impact in e-commerce growth. So thanks for joining me today. Thanks for listening, and see you in the next episode.